certifying the petitions was the first step toward legalizing discrimination in Dade County. And we're committed to making sure that we don't repeat 1977 with the Anita Bryant debacle all over again.
The thriving gay political and social movement of the 1920s was wiped out by a new conservative era in which patriotism, family values, and homophobic legislation were successfully used to incite fear and hatred of gays and lesbians. Does this sound familiar?
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Protections advance in Brazil and the Philippines, but Miami-Dade, Florida will vote on rights repeal again. And the lessons of queer history prompt cautionary contemporary conclusions. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 3 weeks ending January 5th, 2002. The Parliament of the Brazilian state of Minas Gerais has given final approval to a civil rights bill protecting gays and lesbians. Governor Itamar Franco is expected to sign it into law. Member of Parliament João Batista de Oliveira's Law 69499 would punish sexual orientation discrimination with fines, business closures, and in the case of civil servants, dismissal and disqualification. It specifically protects the right of gay and lesbian couples to demonstrate affection in public and provides for action against police officers who harass them. At least three other Brazilian states already prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation.
Civil rights protections are also advancing in the Philippines as a bill won unanimous approval in principle from a committee of the House of Representatives in early December. House Bill 2784 is a comprehensive measure against discrimination based on real or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity that was developed in collaboration with the Filipino group, the Lesbian and Gay Legislative Advocacy Network. It would criminalize discrimination in areas including education, employment, medical care, and public accommodations. If passed, it would become the Philippines' first legislation for gay and lesbian civil rights.
But in East Timor, 60% of the national parliament voted specifically to exclude sexual orientation from categories protected from discrimination under the Young Nation's draft constitution. During the mid-December debate in the Constituent Assembly, one member claimed that the only gays and lesbians in East Timor are foreigners, while another warned that protecting their civil rights would lead to social chaos. The United Nations Transitional Authority, now controlling the former Indonesian state, will cede power to an independent East Timor government in May.
In Jamaica, a government-appointed committee on civil rights reform recommended repeal of the nation's sodomy law. But a group of Roman Catholic bishops from throughout the Caribbean, known as the Bishops of the Antilles Episcopal Conference, immediately protested the proposal with a formal statement citing the moral unacceptability of homosexual relations.
In Egypt, the lone miner arrested in the notorious May police raid on a gay-friendly Cairo riverboat nightclub won a reduction of his sentence on appeal. Mahmoud Abdel Fattah had been sentenced in a youth court to 3 years imprisonment for debauchery, but an appeals court reduced that to the 6 months he'd already served, plus 6 months probation. Human rights groups still maintain that his conviction should have been overturned. 52 adults arrested in the May raid were tried in a national security court, which offered no possibility of appeal for the 23 who were convicted and sentenced to 3 years hard labor. Meanwhile, a misdemeanor court has convicted two male university students in Cairo of indecency, those charges stemming from their offering gay sex for money on a website. Each was sentenced to a year in jail.
Saudi Arabia executed three men on New Year's Day for what official sources described as engaging in the extreme obscenity and ugly acts of homosexuality, marrying among themselves, seducing young men, and attacking those who rebuked them. Ali bin Hattan bin Sa'ad, Mohammed bin Sulaiman bin Mohammed, and Mohammed bin Khalil bin Abdullah were beheaded in the southwestern city of Abha for violating the nation's Islamic laws.
There will be an apology for three victims in a rare Chinese legal case of same-gender sexual harassment. In what's believed to be the first case of its kind in the southern state of Hainan, business owner Wang Guang was ordered to pay a token reparation and make an apology to three male migrant workers he kissed and fondled. Wang told the court he had believed those men to be gay, but one plaintiff said his wife divorced him and aborted their child after learning of the incidents.
The U.S. Army last month issued a so-called stop-loss order to suspend most administrative discharges, but specifically excluded violations of the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Similar orders had already been issued by the Air Force and the Navy in connection with the current U.S. military action in Afghanistan, but in the previous 50 years, no stop-loss order had ever excluded charges relating to homosexuality. Some experts believe that despite the wording of the orders, there will be a repeat of the pattern seen in the past of a decrease in gay discharges while combat continues and a sharp increase afterwards.
Other recent developments out of Washington, D.C. affect gay and lesbian couples. President George W. Bush signed the bill for the capital city's annual federal funding, which this year omitted the long-standing rider prohibiting implementation of a broad domestic partners ordinance the city enacted a decade ago. While the federal funds may not be used to implement the ordinance, Washington city government has said it can do so out of its other funds.
But the U.S. Office of Personnel Management has acted to deny any expansion of family health care benefits for federal civil servants. This means that for the foreseeable future, there will be no health insurance for the domestic partners of unmarried federal employees, including gays and lesbians. While activists were disappointed by the announcement, they were hardly surprised, since the Bush appointee heading the office, Kay Coles James, has played leadership roles in two anti-gay groups, Focus on the Family and the Family Research Council.
And the U.S. Department of Justice has declared that gay and lesbian partners of victims of the September attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon can apply for federal compensation funds, but whether they can actually receive them will depend on the probate laws of their states of residence. Probate laws in almost all the states do not recognize same-gender partners, although those who were explicitly named in victims' wills should qualify for aid. While there are likely to be complicated struggles for many of the estimated 36 gay and lesbian survivors, at least one activist saw it as a landmark advance that the Justice Department regulations did not explicitly restrict compensation to legal spouses and blood relatives. Federal awards to survivors are expected to average more than $1.5 million.
Massachusetts Republican Acting Governor Jane Swift vocally opposes equal marriage rights for same-gender couples, but this week she became the first sitting U.S. governor ever to choose an open gay or lesbian to be her running mate. He's Patrick Guerrero, currently serving on staff in Swift's administration, formerly a state representative and mayor of Melrose, and a vocal advocate for gay and lesbian civil rights. At least two others rejected Swift's invitations to run with her in November, when the ballot will probably also feature a proposed amendment to the state constitution to restrict legal marriage to heterosexual couples. Despite Swift's selection, Guerrero will still have to win a primary election to become the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor.
In Norway, openly gay conservative member of parliament Per Christian Foss has been appointed Minister of Finance, the third highest post in the nation. Longtime Politico, Foss publicly identified himself as a gay man only a year ago in the course of his successful bid to chair the Oslo branch of his party.
New Zealand's biggest lesbi-gay event, Auckland's annual Hero Parade, will be replaced by a scaled-down Pride March next month because of money problems. It's the second consecutive year the traditional event had to be skipped due to debts from past festivals. Organizers are hopeful for its resurrection in 2003.
Even Australia's huge Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras had to win a bailout from the state of New South Wales to go on as scheduled this year. But there's joy in Melbourne, as Joy Melbourne has become the nation's first gay and lesbian radio station to win a full-time community broadcasting license from the Australian Broadcasting Authority. 160 volunteers have run the station off and on with a series of temporary licenses since 1993.
The end of the year also brought the end of two highly visible gay lives. Lance Loud may have been the first gay man to come out to his family on U.S. television. The pioneering 1973 PBS documentary series, An American Family, followed 7 months in the daily lives of the Loud family, and then 20-year-old Lance revealed his orientation to them in front of the cameras. A journalist, musician, and actor, he died at age 50 of hepatitis C after a long struggle with AIDS.
Award-winning British actor Nigel Hawthorne died of a heart attack at the age of 72. Outside the UK, Hawthorne was best known for his Oscar-nominated lead in the film The Madness of King George. But in Britain, he was widely recognized for his role in the TV series Yes Minister. He also won top awards in both the US and UK for his work on the stage. He's survived by his partner, Trevor Bentham.
In happier entertainment news from Britain, lesbian actress Miriam Margolyes appeared on the annual New Year's Honours list to receive the Order of the British Empire. The 60-year-old BAFTA-winning character actress was seen in the film Cats and Dogs and will appear in the next Harry Potter movie as Professor Sprout.
And finally, openly gay British actor Sir Ian McKellen is making a worldwide splash for his role as Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Not only does his character likeness appear on Burger King cups, he and non-gay co-star Christopher Lee are currently appearing on 40-cent stamps in New Zealand, where much of the film was shot. McKellen said gleefully last month, "There's not many people alive that are on a stamp. Everyone sending me a Christmas card from New Zealand is going to lick our backsides and then press us down. Can you believe that?"
That's News Wrap for the 3 weeks ending January 5th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Hello, this is Neil David Seibel from KAJX Studios in Aspen, Colorado. The Aspen Gay and Lesbian Community Fund is once again hosting Aspen Gay and Lesbian Ski Week. Celebrating their 25th anniversary, this year's event runs from January 20th through the 27th, 2002. It's a week-long party on and off the mountain that benefits local, state, regional, and national charities. For more information, visit their website at www.gayskiweek.com. From KAJX in Aspen, Colorado, I'm Neil David Seibel, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Learning from the past is an underlying theme that connects this week's feature stories. Later in the program, a lesbian history professor finds chilling similarities between the early days of the Nazis and the neoconservative movements of today. But first, a report from Florida, where more recent history could be repeating itself.
If I had ever been it before, I would probably know just what to do.
And I feel like I've been here before.
The people of Miami-Dade County may have a chance to decide once again if the area's human rights ordinance should include sexual orientation as a protected class. The question is scheduled to go before the voters in September, but as This Way Out's Susan Gage discovers, supporters of the ordinance are hoping to block the repeal initiative from the ballot and to prevent the kind of divisive campaign some of them remember all too well.
The Miami-Dade County Commission amended the Human Rights Ordinance 3 years ago to include sexual orientation. Since then, Christian conservative groups in the county have been collecting signatures on petitions to force a public vote on the issue. Anthony Verdugo, chairman of the Miami-Dade County Christian Coalition, is one of the leaders of the petition effort. In an interview earlier this year, Verdugo expressed frustration with the county commission's vote in December 1998 to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation.
It was a 7-6 vote. You have to keep that in mind. 2,000 people were there, according to the Miami Police Department, on that day, throughout the day. 2,000 people were there on our side. Okay. So obviously, it's a contentious issue. Obviously, it's a controversial one that needs to be placed in the hands of the voters.
Verdugo says the county commission vote helped galvanize several factions of the conservative Christian movement and gave them the boost they needed to collect 51,000 signatures on their petitions. But Save Dade, the group that supports the sexual orientation amendment, has been challenging the validity of the signatures on the petitions. The two groups have been tangling in court over the issue, and a judge put it back in the hands of county election supervisor David Leahy to make the final determination on the veracity of the petition signatures. Leahy has said a random check of signatures show enough of them are real, and so the question will go to the voters in September 2002. For longtime residents of Miami-Dade County, this may seem like deja vu. In December 1976, the Dade County Commission adopted the same amendment to the Human Rights Ordinance, and that vote ignited the Save Our Children campaign. The leader was entertainer and Florida orange juice pitch woman Anita Bryant. Voters repealed the ordinance amendment in June 1977, and Anita Bryant claimed it a victory for the righteous.
Tonight, the laws of God and the cultural values of man have been vindicated. I thank God for the strength He has given me and my family. And I especially thank my fellow citizens who joined me in what at first was a walk through the wilderness. The people of Dade County, the normal majority, have said, enough, enough, enough.
Bryant attempted to take the Save Our Children campaign to other parts of the country, but she encountered large protests from gays and lesbians and even had one person slam a pie in her face at an appearance in the Midwest. Bryant's marriage to her manager, Bob Green, ended in a divorce, and Anita Bryant left the political stage, refusing to talk about the Dade campaign. Hetty Pena, the chairwoman of the Save Dade group, says much has changed in the county since 1977, and she's hoping not to see a repeat of the bitterness of that time.
This ordinance does nothing more than protect people from discrimination in the areas of employment, housing, and finance. You should not be allowed to be fired from a job because you're gay or because you're straight. So you'll be protected either way. As a heterosexual woman myself, I realized that we have to define for ourselves what community we live in. Will it be an inclusive one? Or will it be one where we discriminate against people? And that's why I got involved personally, because I wasn't going to let a few people define my community for me.
Save Dade has filed a lawsuit challenging the certification of the Take Back Miami-Dade's petition to the ballot. The suit asks a circuit court judge to order the supervisor of elections to review all 51,000 petitions before allowing the ordinance to go up for a vote. Take Back Miami-Dade has accused the group of trying to manipulate the judicial system. Short of winning a court battle, Hetty Pena of Save Dade is hoping to win the battle of the ballots in September.
We've been working for years identifying voters. That work will continue. Now we'll need more volunteers than ever. We'll need to raise money. We need to do everything we can to make sure that discrimination is not legal in Dade County. And obviously, certifying the petitions was the first step toward legalizing discrimination in Dade County. And we're committed to making sure that that doesn't happen again, that we don't repeat 1977 with the Anita Bryant debacle all over again.
For This Way Out, this is Susan Gage in Tallahassee.
I'm Roman Kalinin from Moscow. You are listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay on our wavelength.
Not knowing our queer history is dangerous, especially if it leads us to a false sense of security about the state of the LGBT movement.
That's lesbian historian Jane Ward, who's taught courses in lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender history and social movements at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Ward believes the oft-repeated adage that those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it, and shares her knowledge of the past as a way to analyze the present.
The most common account of queer history suggests that the first lesbian and gay social movement started with the Stonewall Rebellion of 1969. But historians also remind us that decades before Stonewall, people were living queer lives, starting queer organizations, hanging out in queer social scenes, and most importantly, in 1920s Europe, gays and lesbians were protesting for equal rights and celebrating pride. Did these early queers also have a sense of being right on the verge of equality, just at the edge of complete safety and freedom? Is the political climate of today really so unique? Prior to the 20th century, the first gay rights organization, called the Scientific Humanitarian Committee, was founded by three gay men in Berlin in 1897. The committee was the leading voice for gay rights around the world, making Germany the center of the early gay political movement. The founders of Scientific Humanitarian Committee started the first gay journal and wrote a gay rights manifesto called Sappho and Socrates. But their biggest project was a petition campaign to abolish paragraph 175 of German law, which stated that homosexuals were subject to legal penalties if they were discovered to be gay. In 1903, they reached 6,000 signatures, including many members of the intelligentsia, such as Albert Einstein and Hermann Hesse. Also at this time, some lesbians began to be openly critical of the early women's movement due to its silence on lesbian issues, much as lesbians today challenge the feminist movement to be more inclusive. By the 1920s, there was cause for serious optimism among queers in Germany. Social Democrats came into power, women were granted the right to vote, and a large united front of gay organizations was organized. One of the speeches given by a founder of the Scientific Humanitarian Committee reflects the power and solidarity that had been established by this time. Quote, "No homosexual should be absent, rich or poor, worker or scholar, diplomat or businessman. We must show whether we have developed into a fighting organization or just a social club. He who does not march with us marches against us." This period, in many ways, looked and felt somewhat like the political moment of today. There was rising consciousness about gay life among the general population. There were debates about other social movements incorporating a gay and lesbian agenda. There were debates about whether gay organizations should be social or political. And there were lesbian and gay restaurants, hotels, bathhouses, party circuits, drag balls, cafes and bars in several major cities, including 14 lesbian bars in Berlin alone. And by 1929, paragraph 175 was dropped from German law. And this was just in Germany. France during the 1920s was the home of a vibrant and growing literary and artistic scene in which lesbians and gay men were central. Paris was famous for its very large and glamorous Magic City celebration, which was an enormous and enormously queer drag ball on the scale of Mardi Gras. Paris was also home to lesbian intellectual elites who came together to write poetry and prose about love between women and to hold salons attended by famous poets and writers. In England, in 1914, the British Society for the Study of Sex Psychology was founded and sponsored public lectures and pamphlets that advocated egalitarian marriage and acceptance of same-sex couples. In Russia, criminal penalties for homosexuality were dropped, and the Russian government proclaimed its policy that sexuality was a private matter, of no concern to government officials. This sentiment was reflected in the words of a Russian doctor who wrote a book called The Sexual Revolution in Russia, published in the 1920s. He states, quote, "As for homosexuality, sodomy, and whatever forms of sexuality that are considered as moral violations by European legal codes, Russian law treats them just the same as so-called natural intercourse. All forms of intercourse are private matters." And in the U.S., the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s produced a flourish of lesbian and gay themes in music and literature. Blues singer Ma Rainey performed songs like Sissy Man Blues, Bull Dyke Women's Blues, and Fairy Blues. And in 1924, the first organized gay movement group in the United States was founded, called the Society for Human Rights. The 1920s marked several dramatic developments in the visibility of lesbians and gays in art, literature, music, politics, and social and intellectual scenes around the world. And I can't help but wonder whether these queers had any idea what the future held for their movement. But of course, we know what happened. Shortly after all of these gains, with the rise of Nazi control in Germany, everything changed. Similar to the family values rhetoric today, the Nazis in the 1930s wanted to roll back history to an earlier and more moral and harmonious era of German greatness. As early as 1926, lesbian and gay journals were banned in Germany, and in 1928, the Nazi Party issued the following statement, quote, "Anyone who even thinks of homosexual love is our enemy. We reject anything which emasculates our people and makes it a plaything for our enemies, for we know that life is a fight and it's madness to think that men will ever embrace fraternally." Yet because the 1920s had produced such a thriving gay movement and paragraph 175 had been removed from German law, many gays and lesbians in Germany just couldn't believe that the Nazi threat was a serious one. Even the final issues of gay journals in print at the time held announcements of upcoming events that would never take place. By the 1930s, the gay bars that had been established in the 1920s were raided and shut down by Nazis. And in 1933, Kurt Hiller, who had been the leading gay rights activist in Germany, was seized and taken to a concentration camp. The Nazis also raided the Institute for Sex Research and destroyed 12,000 books and 35,000 pictures, which would have provided the foundation for lesbian and gay historical archives, documents that are now lost forever. In 1934, paragraph 175 was reinserted into German law and extended to include a kiss, an embrace, even homosexual fantasies. In 1940, Hitler ordered that everyone completing a prison term under paragraph 175 was to be sent to a concentration camp. The number of gay people who died in concentration camps will never be known because the Nazis destroyed these records as the Allied armies entered Germany. But historians think that 5,000 to 15,000 camp inmates were designated as homosexual. The Gestapo was able to locate gay people not only by raiding bars, but also by pulling names from gay newspapers and journals. And this strategy was successful precisely because so many people had been out during the preceding years celebrating their growing pride and freedom. The thriving gay political and social movement of the 1920s was wiped out by a new conservative era in which patriotism, family values, and homophobic legislation were successfully used to incite fear and hatred of gays and lesbians. Does this sound familiar? Execution-style murders of gays and lesbians? Ex-gay ministries and conversion centers? Police brutality? Should we be taking these signs more seriously? We cannot and will not be lulled into ignoring our current and future challenges.
Jane Ward is a Los Angeles activist who's taught LGBT history and social movements at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Rex Walkner, and Susan Gage contributed program material. Thanks also to Chris Allen. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young sang Deja Vu, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KALW San Francisco, California, CFBU St. Catharines, Ontario, WXPN Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station.
Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay tuned.